Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Anthony Tussler from About Disability. So you have a background in identifying and finding disabilities music. Can you tell me a little about that?
Yeah, it started years and years ago. I think that primarily it was my reaction to hearing the song "Ruby, Don't Take Your Love to Town," which is a story about a veteran who has a disability whose wife is cheating on him, and he wants to kill her. And it's really there's the one phrase in there that really jumped out at me, and that is, it's hard to love a man whose legs are bent, paralyzed. And it was so offensive, and the record sold, I don't know, 12, 14 million copies, and so it was very much a part of the out there in public. And here it was, about disability. You know, I've had a disability since I was 5 years old, so it really struck me. And so I started looking around for other music that had disability references in it, and I thought I'd find quite a bit. And actually, I haven't found that much where the subject matter of the music is has anything to do with disability. Country music has what's called weepers, which are sad songs, and there's a number of them that feature disability stories. One of them about a poor kid who can't leave the house, who has friends using his CB radio and things like that. But what I did start to discover is the number of people who are singers and songwriters who have disabilities. And so that's really become my primary interest over the last couple of years.
So when you mention singers and songwriters, give me an example.
The person I'm most entranced with right now, and it's rare that I use the word hero, but I certainly do, as regards to Doc Pomus. Doc Pomus was a grew up in Brooklyn in the 30s, and got polio, and was part of a group of kids there in the late 30s, early 40s, who had polio. He was in the one of those big polio wards in New York, went to camp with a bunch of other kids with polio, and at some point went down to Warm Springs, which President Roosevelt had started as a place to help people with polio. So anyway, Doc Pomus, at a really young age, heard a blues record, and it struck him as, in a really deep, profound way, and he was never able to describe it really clearly why it struck him so hard. But I think part of it for me was Doc felt like an outsider because of his disability, and to hear an African-American blues song that comes from an outsider's perspective, I think he felt a real camaraderie there. And so here's this Jewish kid from Brooklyn who decides to become a blues shouter. And, not only a Jewish kid from the New York area, but a kid who uses crutches. And so he started to work the various clubs, and his name is Jerome Felder, but he changed it. His stage name was Doc Thomas. But he found that it was just too hard on his body to try and make a living as a singer, because he was never going to break through to being one of those people that has national recognition and can make enough money on records. And so he started writing songs, and his songs became very popular, and ultimately he ended up writing Save the Last Dance for Me, which is a song just about everybody knows. And I argue that everybody knows it and everyone loves it because it talks in such a profound way about the human condition, which is our fear of loss of our mate, the person close to us. You know, in the song, it's, you can dance every dance with any guy who'll give you the eye. So it talks that insecurity that we all have, and it resolves that by him saying, don't forget in whose arms you're going to be. Save the last dance for me. And so the story turns out as a happy ending, so, in that he is with his partner. And so I believe it's his disability perspective as an outsider, he was able to see the human condition in a really profound way.
So what would you say is the most significant contribution in terms of disabilities music?
So little of it is known. I mean, so often when I talk about Doc Thomas, nobody's aware that he was a wheelchair user. And then he had a perspective of being a wheelchair user who he saw himself, his disability identity, as similar to African Americans and the poor. He saw it in very political terms. And this was back in the 30s and 40s, which I think is amazing. So, you know, what's the greatest contribution? It's hard to say. I mean, even the opera, Porgy and Bess, incredibly well known. The music from it, I mean, Summertime has been recorded by hundreds of people. Summertime was written by DeBose Hayward, who was another guy who had polio.
So
he writes the story of Porgy and Bess, and Porgy has a profound disability. And the story of Porgy and Bess is about how, as a disabled man, he was able to live a full life. And everybody who talks about Porgy and Bess, his disability is completely ignored. They say it's a story of a crippled beggar, and that's the last time they mention his disability. And so, really, what all of this, my interest in music, has shown me is that disability identity is really hidden in plain view throughout American society, well, world society.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Anthony touched on one of the key points of disability life during the interview, that it is all about going into the deeper meaning. There's asking the questions on the surface, what does this mean on a superficial level? But if you look beyond all that, you start to see the bigger picture in disability life. For example, past guest Samantha Newmarch once held a door for a guy in a wheelchair. Simple gesture. Or is it? Was it simply helping somebody get inside a building? Or did it send a message of respect, saying, I respect your right to access. I respect that you have just as much right to be here as I do. Same is true even in disability social circles. Sometimes the way a person can act can stem from their condition. Those with less impulse control are a great example of this. Sometimes they act out without thinking. Is it because they want to disrupt things? Is it because they want to cause problems? Or is it simply the mind's way of responding to a situation. And, well, there are many times for people with disabilities and even their able-bodied counterparts that situations do come up that are hard to deal with. But in disability life, look for the deeper meaning. Ask the questions. Why might this person have taken this act? What can we do to support this person? How can we stand by them? How can we make things better for them? And if there's a way, we as a society should always take steps to be understanding, but to look beyond the superficial, to look beyond the obvious. Say to ourselves, I heard this song. Do you suppose the artist had in mind, in some way, that this could touch the heart of somebody with a disability? If a song's meant to be inspiring, for example, it can inspire anyone, whether they have a disability or not. But if it's someone with a disability who all their lives has never had those simple words of encouragement, it can change everything. Because once a person with a disability finds their strength, they never, ever forget it. They come to realize that maybe what once seemed hopeless is not so much anymore. Same is true of able-bodied society. Once a mind is stretched to a new idea, once a person embraces the fact that they do indeed have abilities and gifts to share with the world, it's not something you can just shrug off or disregard. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Don't feel alone. The Distress Center provides free, anonymous and confidential, caring and emotional support, referrals, crisis intervention, and suicide prevention by specially trained volunteers. They're open from noon to midnight. Sometimes talking does help. So call 519-256-5000.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Anthony Tussler, disabilities music expert. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Kathy Overman from Fishing Has No Boundaries. So tell me a little bit about Fishing Has No Boundaries.
Well, Fishing Has No Boundaries came together back in 1986, and what our program does is works with communities and volunteers to take people with disabilities out fishing who wouldn't have a chance to go on their own. And over the years, we have serviced, in 2014, we served 1,271 disabled anglers in 14 states.
So, do you use any modified equipment in this practice?
Yes, we have found several pieces of adaptive equipment over the years. We do have some electric reels as well as rod holders and several different types, some that can actually be attached to a wheelchair or to a walker, just depending on what the needs are.
So, what type of disability do you most commonly see in this work?
Actually, it depends on where you are in the country. Our groups in New York have basically worked with brain injuries. Our groups in Kansas are emotionally disabled. It varies all over the country. I have some groups that will have just a full mix where we have physically challenged, mentally challenged, brain injuries, birth defects, MS, Parkinson's. It could be anything.
Can you tell me a little bit about how the work began?
Bobby Kamick was a fishing guide on the Chippewa Flowage back in the late 80s, and actually it's where he grew up. And what he did was, he was a professional guide and went out fishing, And one time, he was also in the military. He also ended up with a leg injury and from an illness and had difficulty getting in and out of his boat. And what happened then was, is he found out that, you know, it was affecting his livelihood. He happened, fortunately, to get better. We were very lucky for that. And then he connected with some of his friends and some of his clients and found out that he had lost some clients due to physical disabilities. And so he got a group together here in Hayward, Wisconsin, and said, hey, guys, what are you thinking? And over a 2 years' time, we were able to put an event together. We had 80 participants and probably about 100 volunteers. We came together on the Chippewa Foliage, where it is still held, for the Hayward event for the last 27 years.
So, in your time with the organization, have there been any challenges that you've witnessed?
There are, in the national organization, as well in the chapters, it's always a challenge for funding, because we really don't have any official organizations that sponsor us or companies. We pretty much work in donations. Sometimes it's just a one-time donation from a company or a foundation. We do work through grants and programs like that. As a 501c3, we are also accountable to all of the actions and finances for all of our chapters across the country. So financing is a challenge. We do run with a budget of about $100,000.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with Fishing Has No Boundaries, is there any one success moment that stood out for you?
Actually, there's many, but one probably most recent, this year, we had a young man who's been coming to the Hayward event, and he is physically challenged, but he came and he talked to the chapter chair and said, I would like to help people who would like to fish like I do. So he went out and he found different aluminum cans, and he cleared roadsides with his family and came and donated enough money for an electric reel. And it's just a warm feeling to know that it isn't just the participants, our disabled anglers, who enjoy it. It's as much as our volunteers. And for many of our disabled anglers to be able to respond back and knowing what, appreciate the opportunity and know that they too can make a difference. It made a big difference in that young man's life. He was all of 11 years old.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for the organization?
I have a continuous growth in my lending library. As members of our organization, if someone chooses to become a member, that it's $25, but for that $25, they're able to contact the office and borrow a piece of equipment if need be. If they have trouble themselves or know of someone who has trouble, they can call my office and I'll be happy to troubleshoot and find out what adaptive equipment is out there for them.
So, do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
I guess I'm not sure about the question. I work with many organizations, but we really don't have any partnerships.
If you could send any one message about the need for the disabled community to get involved with events like fishing, what would it be?
I would like them to know that it's important to be able to open our great outdoors for people who may have fished and had to stop and they need a chance to go back. I need volunteers who want to take a moment of their time. It could be a day, it could be longer, depending on what they want to do. We know that these opportunities on the water for people with disabilities is a major part of their year. They look forward to it from year to year. For some, it's only once a year. For some, they may go to a couple of events. But it doesn't happen without volunteers and members. and, you know, becoming a member and helping support our organization.
So how do you go about spreading the word about the work of the organization?
That's kind of difficult when you don't have a very big budget. We do have a website, which is a way that we have connected with a lot of people across the country, including people across on the other side of the world. I do a couple of sports shows. Some of our chapters go to sports shows or events where they're able to show and tell more about Fishing Has No Boundaries. We do have some professional fishing guides, Marianne Husky for one, who has also gone out and done some promotion for us. So it's really word of mouth, and sometimes it's still difficult because people don't realize that just giving of their time can do so much.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
I will. Thank you.
Of course. Fishing Has No Boundaries. An interesting name, I think, because disability life is constantly about expanding the boundaries, expanding our own definition of what is quote-unquote normal in the world. It's about seeing things in a new way. It's about entering into someone's life and seeing what you can learn from a shared experience. Disability life is all about asking the questions. What does this really mean? What is really the spirit that went into this action or statement or the inspiration behind new technologies even? There's always the question of how can it benefit society as a whole? But if you subdivide that a little, you can ask, what specific applications can it have for a person with a disability? And in many cases, this is a great thing to ask. Just to look at what can be accomplished if a creative mind is put to it. Disability life, in all forms, is about recognizing potential, recognizing strengths. Now, one of the main things I've come to notice of late is in disability life, not everybody has what you would call a social strength. Even amongst groups of individuals with disabilities together, there's still the misunderstandings, the misperceptions, but, as I said, it's all about asking questions. Asking, what does this mean? And did the statement match the intention? Anyone and any organization that stands beside a person with a disability, patience, understanding, and a mind that says there could be more to this than meets the eye, is someone with a great story. If you're such a person with a great story to share of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Understanding and wisdom are the keys to disability life. Once you understand that a thing is possible, you start to ask the questions, how can we make this work? And like with any group in society, the more individuals with disabilities you bring together, the more insights that are shared, more perspectives you add, the greater the potential. And yes, there are even times when a person with a disability, like anyone else in society, needs some encouragement, needs some support. Support can be difficult, especially if a person with a disability has maintained their whole life that they can't do a thing, that music cannot speak to them, what's in their lives, in their hearts, or they can't get out there and fish with the able body. They can't be a part of it all. There's nothing wrong with having some questions about what a person can do. But if you spend your whole life believing that something's impossible, that you can only achieve to a certain level, then someone comes along and says, I have a program, or I have an alternative for this. Yeah, sometimes there's going to be some resistance. But I maintain every member of the disabled community, along with every member of the able-bodied community, all have potential and the capability to succeed. They can do amazing things. But it begins by believing in oneself. Begins with saying, I think there is a possibility. I think there is some hope in the world. Maybe it is simply a matter of somebody being first. Being the first person to take a step and say, yes, I can modify this piece of technology. Or yes, I can offer you some encouragement when I think you need it. If it begins there, then progress quickly follows. Truth is, disability life, like all life, is a constant evolution towards finding the best ways of doing things. Now, modified equipment, modified policies, these are the external forces that can better the lives of people with disabilities. But internally, what it has to be is modified attitude, modified perception. Going from a place where something is too big to be tackled, too big to be handled by one person, to a place where it's seen for what it really is. One factor within a person's life, one element to who they are. It's not necessarily an easy progression, coming to a place where you're out in a social circle or out appreciating something for the very first time. And it can be something simple like music, just relaxing, letting a song affect you. Or it can be out in a group activity, out fishing with others, sharing an experience, and maybe even some insights. But the point is, you have to be willing to take that first step, that first recognition that something is possible before anything can happen. If a person is entirely resistant to the idea that they are capable, yes, that person is going to have a hard time accepting their own strength. But that is where those who stand beside individuals with disabilities come in. We all need someone in our lives and in society to stand beside us. Nobody gets through life on their own. It's organizations like Fishing Has No Boundaries that stand beside these people, help them achieve their best. It's individuals like Anthony who are looking at the deeper meaning, looking beyond the obvious, not simply being satisfied with the simple definition of what something can mean, asking, can this apply to someone with a disability? Can it mean something greater? If you look at things from the right perspective, the right angle, you might come to realize that the world is a little more inclusive than we often give it credit for. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks, and we'll see you next week.